All righty. I think it's about time, isn't it? Let's go. Welcome. How are y'all doing? All right, good. So my name is Paul Sheriff. I'm the president of PDSA Incorporated. We're a custom development shop in Orange County, California. I've been speaking and writing and doing all sorts of stuff for many, many years. I'm sure some of you have seen my articles over the years in various magazines. My company primarily focuses on custom software development, and we actually build developer tools that we use internally and that we also sell. We also do software audits. I have about, well, I got 15 developers on staff, I have to remember there. And we're doing, you know, primarily just business application development for anybody who needs it. Like I said, we do sell our own tools that we use internally. We have a code generator called Haystack and our .NET productivity framework. Once the session is over, I actually have some flyers and everything up here on the table and some CDs. Feel free to come up and take a look at those. All right, so what are we doing? Well, we're going to be talking about MVVVM, Model View, View Model. Now, I'm going to keep it pretty much agnostic. The samples I have are both in Silverlight and WPF. So when you download it, you have both of them there. And I'll talk about why we want to do this, and then really just a lot of demos. So. All right, MVVVM, Model View, View Model. Basically, model is the data classes that you build. All right, so if you have not been building data classes yet, you need to. Okay, that's really kind of the way everything's been moving for many, many years. We started doing it back in the VB4 days, so that's about 15 years ago now. And basically, all you're doing is you're building a class that knows how to talk to your tables, right? All right, and then you guys build a user interface, I'm assuming, in some things, okay, maybe not, but in most cases, we're building a user interface in something, all right, ASP.NET or WPF or Silverlight or Windows Phone. So that's the view portion of this. And what we used to do in the past is a lot of times right from the code behind of your view, you would write code to talk to the model, okay? That was fine. But now what we're talking about is just putting a little class in between the two, right? And that's all the view model portion is. It's a class in between, okay? The reason why we want to do this is because this is what the UI will bind up to, all right? We're going to have the UI say, I'm going to bind to this class and bind to the properties so that it can feed the data to me. I'm the view. We also want to make sure that the view model, his job is also to consume the services of the model, right? He wants to talk to the model to say, hey, I need the data. Go get the data however and wherever you get it from. Okay, and that may depend on the environment you're running in. So the view model, his job is really to expose the services and the properties, right, from the model so it can be consumed by the view. So why? Okay? Oh, I'm sorry, not why yet. So the what? We're still on the what. So the view, here's the thing, guys. The view really shouldn't talk to the model directly. Don't have your code behind making calls to your data classes, all right? I'm going to use, like, you know, the entity framework or link to SQL, things like that. Okay, a lot of you. That's your model, right? That's a data layer. I love entity framework. It's not a framework. It's a data layer. It's a code generator, too, by the way. I don't know if you guys know that. So that's our model. We don't want to be making calls directly from our code behind directly to that layer. Okay? Maybe you're using CodeSmith, LBLGen, maybe using Haystack or whatever to generate your data layer. So the model also knows nothing about the UI. He should not be talking to that UI piece at all. The model should not have anything in it related to UI. The model also knows nothing about the view model class. Okay? That's a one-way type of thing, right? So the view model also really doesn't know anything about the view. And I'll talk about why that's important in just a minute. So all the communication that we do, at least in the XAML world, the communication from the view, the UI, to this view model class is all done through data binding. Okay, so any lists that we have for list boxes and grids, maybe setting is enabled properties or visibility properties for buttons, right? Setting data into the text boxes that we have, all of that should be done in the XAML world through text boxes. Now let me ask you something. Some of you said you were doing ASP.NET as well. Can you use the view model approach in ASP.NET? Absolutely. Why not? Okay. In fact, I just wrote an article for Code Magazine. I think it's coming out next month, if I remember right. And I actually take the same exact view model and I show running it in WPF, Silverlight, Windows Phone, ASP.NET. Okay, exact same set of services. I don't change any of that back-end stuff at all. And that's part of our goal here, right, is to separate the UI from the business logic, from the data logic, and be able to swap out that UI. Okay, I mean, okay, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was pretty easy. We had basically, you know, Windows Forms and ASP.NET. That was what we had. Okay? 15 years ago, we had VB6. All right, or maybe you were, you know, doing C++ and, you know, MFC or something like that. So we really had developing for the desktop. Okay, and that was it. Now, oh my gosh, we have WPF, we have Silverlight, we have Windows Phone, we have the new Windows Metro, you know, we have the XAML part, we have the HTML5, we have HTML5 with JavaScript and jQuery calling back to services. Holy jamoly. We have iPhone, we have Droid, we have, you know, all those other things that I am not supposed to mention at a Microsoft conference, and I apologize, but we all have various UIs that we need to target today. Okay? How many of you right now are targeting multiple UIs? Yeah. To really do it effectively, it's really up to you to build this set of services on the back end, this model and the view model. Because when you do it and you do it correctly, which is very easy to do, it's just a class, okay, you should be able to reuse it from one UI to another. So, you know, next year or the year after, when the new whiz-bang UI comes out, whatever that is, you should be able to reuse the same stuff that you have now. And that's really why people are saying, hey, we really want to be able to move to this to get this better separation of concerns than we had in the past. A huge benefit also of doing this is for unit testing. Okay? So if you can express in this view model class all of the rules about maybe even the view. So for instance, how many of you have like an add, save, and a cancel button on a typical data access screen? Most of us do, right? When you click on that add button, don't you want the save and the cancel to become enabled and the add probably to be disabled? Right? I mean, that's kind of a UI logic that regardless of the type of UI you create, you're going to need that logic, aren't you? So instead of writing that in the code behind, okay, write it in the view model, such that when you set the property for is add enabled, when you set it to true, then the is save enabled and the is cancel enabled go to false. Right? I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? Because then you could write a unit test, couldn't you? To test and say, hey, if I set this, do the other two properties get set? Because if that works, you know it's going to work regardless of the UI that you're on, as long as in the case of XAML, you've done your binding correctly. Okay? So what we're trying to do, how many of you do this? How many of you write your code, press F5, right? Wait. Okay, log in. Oops, forgot a long password. Oh yeah, log in again. Enter. Okay, let's see, I gotta go here, type in some stuff here, hit enter there, go here. Okay, and then you find out that the bug you were trying to fix is not fixed. So then you gotta stop Visual Studio and wait, go fix it, press F5 again, wait, and you see the problem here, okay? If you're always waiting for your UI to test your UI logic, you're wasting probably a good half an hour a day. It could be more, depending on how big your project is, etc. So if we can get all of the properties that represent the state of our UI burned into the view model here, now we can just do some unit testing. And unit testing goes like that, doesn't it? Very quick to do. Okay, so that's part of the reason as well that we're trying to move to MVVM, being able to separate our concerns, be able to swap out the UI, okay, do some unit testing, and then, of course, writing less code in the UI, because then when my manager comes to me and says, hey, I love the desktop app you did, wonderful, we now got to move it to the Windows Phone, or now we got to move it to, you know, Silverlight, or we got to move it to ASP.NET. Now, you have very little code to reduplicate, don't you? Because most of the logic is in your view model. All right, so those are the reasons why we want to move towards this particular style of coding. Okay? Now, you know, don't let all these buzzwords and acronyms and everything, you know, everybody's got to create, you know, all this fancy words around everything. MVVVM and MVC and la-di-da-di-da, right? Don't let it fool you, guys. All it is a class. I know everybody here is a classy developer. You guys have written classes, right? Okay. Properties, methods. I know the jokes get worse as it goes on, so don't worry. Okay. But if you can create classes with properties and methods, you're there. That's all you need to do. All right. Clear so far? Clear as mud? All right. So let's switch over. And let's do something. Okay. So as a very simple starting point, so how many doing Silverlight again? How many doing Silverlight? How many doing WPF? Okay, Windows Forms. Okay, cool, all right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll start out in WPF. It doesn't matter. Everything we're gonna do here, we can do in WPF, Silverlight, any XAML, we can do it in Metro XAML. So everything I'm gonna do here is just exactly the same. The sample I'm gonna go through when I start talking about this will actually be in Silverlight. But I want to show you something really quick because it kind of is a neat way to illustrate how we get from, you know, what we used to do to this new MVVVM approach. So what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to throw a couple of checkboxes on here. This one I'm going to name. I'm going to give it a name of CHK Benefits. And the content for this guy is simply going to be has benefits. Okay? Like so. And then the benefits I'm going to have will be something like healthcare and a 401k. All right, so oops, if I can hit the right keys, there we go. So at this point, right, how many of you have ever done code like this where you say, well, the only time I want these guys to become enabled is when I click on the first one, right? Otherwise, they need to be disabled. So in the past, in Windows Forms or in ASP.NET Web Forms or something like that, you'd have to write code in the code behind. With XAML, this is really easy. Because all I have to do here is I go to the isEnabled property, and I apply a data binding, right? And I say I'm going to use an element called chkBenefits. Remember, I named that first one. And the path or the property that I want to get to here is isChecked. So I'm setting the isEnabled to be the same as whatever the isChecked is. And look at that. Even in design time, it grays out. All right? So the data binding already has been applied here. So let's go and do this one as well. Element name is CHK benefits, and the path here is checked. Look at that, guys. Isn't that cool? Okay. Now, I don't even have to write code to do that. That's all through the magic of data binding, isn't it? The problem is what I've just done there is not very transportable if I was going to go to, say, ASP.NET. Right? Now, I could take that exact same code and run it on Silverlight. I could run it on Windows Phone. It would all work, wouldn't it? Okay. So what we'd like, though, is to get something a little bit more reusable than that. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a class. Like I said, we're all going to be classy people by the time we're done. So I'm going to create a little class. I'm just going to call it Simple View Model. Right. Very quick and dirty here. Now, what I want to do is I want to create three properties because I have a has benefits, right? I have a 401k and a healthcare. So I would simply do, you know, some properties here, right? Like that. But the problem with that is that doesn't inform the UI what I'm trying to do. So I can't really use those auto properties. I have to have a full property with a backing field, and I also have to raise what's called a notify property changed event. This is typical in XAML. So what I'm going to do is this, guys. I'm going to drop in a little class here, okay? Here, called common base, that simply implements an interface called iNotifyPropertyChanged. Now, this is a very simple little event that gets raised, okay? And his job is to communicate to the XAML UI and say, hey, XAML UI, something just changed here, and I'm going to pass in the property name of what changed. So that way, when I bind to that property, the UI can say, oh, well, I better go get the new value because I know it just changed. And I'm going to show you that in just a second. But what I always do, and I think most of you have done this, is I create a common base class that all of my other guys can inherit from. Okay, so under my common library, there's my common base class. So now I can create just a tiny little private variable. Okay, it's going to be a Boolean. And it's, let's see, has benefits. Now let's do it in is. I like is. Is benefits checked? Okay, like so. We'll set it to false here at the beginning. So then I would just create a regular Boolean. Oops, I better make that an underscore, hadn't I? There we go. Is benefits checked? Like so. With a getter and a setter, right? Everybody know where I'm going with this? Okay, good. I'm not going to do it. I can create it faster. So I'm going to create is benefits checked. I'm going to create is 401k enabled and is healthcare enabled. Okay, and there we go. So I cheat. I am the laziest programmer in the world, so anytime I have to do more thing more than once, I write a little code generator for it. So, and that thing automatically drops in my little raise property changed. So what I did is I created, oops, I did string. That isn't not going to work, is it? So clear that, change it to Boolean. See, I get going so fast, I just goof up. There we go. Let's try that one now. Cool. All right. Boolean, that helps. Much better. All right, so I have three Booleans. Now, what we want to do, right, is we want to hook up this guy here to this property right here, right, the is benefits checked. Okay, it's a public property, so we should be able to do it quick and easy. So to do that and to really take advantage of this stuff, what we're going to do is we're going to bring in an XML namespace that is the name of this particular application, WPF application 1. Okay, and I'm going to give it an alias here called VM. Now, let me ask you guys something. Are you guys familiar with namespaces in .NET? Should be a rhetorical question, okay? Because hopefully everybody does, right? Okay. Has anybody ever done something like this? Using, okay, what have I done? I've assigned an alias, haven't I, to that namespace. So now down here I can use the full thing, WPF application 1 dot, or I can now use VM. And notice it, look at the little icon for it, right? It's another namespace. It's just aliasing the other one. Does that make sense? Well, we can do the same thing, guys, in XML. And XAML is XML, isn't it? So what I'm doing is I'm saying, hey, I'm defining an XML namespace. I'm giving it an alias of view model, and it's pointing VM, and it's pointing to this particular DLL, right, this assembly. All right. I'm going to go ahead and do a build here. Now, what I can do then is in the window resources section of this particular window, I can now do an open bracket here, right, or less than sign, and then look at this. If I do VM, look at that. It looks like a namespace, doesn't it? The difference between .NET and XML is we need a colon in between, and then there is my list of classes. Okay, so I'm going to choose the simple view model here. I'm going to give it a variable name. Right? And what this does when I run this application, okay, is this will actually create an instance of ViewModel for me. It'll actually create an instance of that simple ViewModel class. Now that's really cool. Because again, I don't have to write any code behind to have this happen. So now what I'm going to do is at the grid level, right? And it's a whole parent-child relationship thing here, right? Everybody understands that in XAML. Okay, one of the best things I like to do is bring up the document outline because this really shows the hierarchy. See that? The grid is the top level. So what you do inside of the grid then is you use that and say, hey, I'd like to set a data source. All right? I want to make the data source that class that I just created here, the view model. So we simply bring up the property window here, okay? Go to the grid, we find the data context, and again we apply a data binding. This time I'm going to my static resources that's in the window resources that we see here, and there's my name that I created, ViewModel. All right, so now we've got the context of the data set. So now what I can do is this, guys. I can now go to my checkbox here that has benefits, and I can find the isChecked property. And again, if this is called the advanced properties area right here, this little box, when you click on that, you say apply data binding. And look what happens. It automatically brings up any properties that happen to be in the data context of its parent. Isn't that nice? Okay, so now I can say, yeah, that guy's the is benefits checked. So I've bound him to that guy. Okay, now I come over here to the healthcare one, right? I'm going to reset this guy. And then now I'm going to apply a data binding on this one to the is healthcare enabled. And then I come down here to the 401k and again reset this value and apply a data binding to is 401k enabled. Notice what it's done, right? It's simply put in our little binding statements here that are all binding to the same data context. All right, make sense? So now I'm going to go ahead and do a build. Let me go back over here and I'm going to change the is benefits check to a true. Okay, and rebuild. And when we come back to the main window, you're going to be like, but wait a minute. That guy's checked, but the other two are still disabled. Well, because what I want to do is this. My rule, remember as I said, is that if this guy changes his value from true to false or false to true, I need to set the other two properties, don't I? So in the set, I'm going to say is 401k enabled equal to the same value and is healthcare enabled to the same value. Now let's build. Let's go back to the main window, okay? And did I build there? Did it work? Okay. Voila. Ooh, ah, right. All right. So what's happened here, okay, is by me setting those properties, okay, and by doing the correct data binding, I now have kind of a UI business rule in place, don't I? So let me ask you something. I did this in WPF. Would this work in Silverlight? Sure it would. Would this work in ASP.NET? Sure it would. Would it work in Windows Forms? Sure it would. Okay. Now, the difference is in Windows Forms, I don't have the same kind of binding. So I'd have to write a little bit of code, wouldn't I? All right. But at least the logic is still in place here. All I have to do is basically set properties in Windows Forms and like in ASP.NET, for instance. Okay. But we get a lot of reuse out of this. All right. Make sure I haven't skipped anything. We're good. Okay. How are we doing, guys? Okay? Does this make sense? So all I've done is created a class, haven't I? Okay? So that's a simple, you know, simple example, but it kind of proves that, hey, this really is easy to do. All right. So now let's go down and go to the next sample then. Now what I have is I have a couple of different samples that are that you can download from my website there. This one here is a Silverlight application. Okay, and then I do have another one, and that's the WPF samples here. If everybody wouldn't mind, go ahead and set your cell phones on stun for me, please. All right. So I've got, you know, this same exact set of samples here, both in WPF and in Silverlight. All right, so this is the whole samples that you guys are going to get. And I just did them in C#, but I figure you guys are smart enough to convert between C# and VB. So I've got the first one done. I've got the same ones that I just did by hand. I've already got those here. Okay, so I got the simple data binding, then I got the other one that I just did, the is benefits checked one. Okay, very simple. So everything's still there that I just did, even though I did them by hand. But let's take a look at our next sample then. So first off, let's go ahead and run this guy. So like I said, this is Silverlight here. So on this one, I have a search function, right? So I'm sure you guys have done something like this. You have a start date and an end date. You're going to then submit something to the back end to say, give me all the records between these two dates, right? So there could be some business rules associated with this. So, for instance, one of the things is if I put the end date before the start date, I probably want to tell the user they're an idiot. We all know that, right? User equals idiot. This is just a given, okay? In our world, this is a given, right? Okay. So we need to come up with a nice message to them. We always try to be nice. We don't want to say, hey, idiot, you forgot, you know. Come up with a better error message. So how did all of this work? So I'm glad you asked. Let's take a look. So here's my little form here. I simply have a text box, okay, with a start date bound to a property called a start date. I then have another text box that is bound then to a end date property. And I did set the mode two-way in Silverlight. You know, you have to do that Okay, WPF, it's two-way automatically. Okay, and then I have my little search button. Now what I did is right underneath the button, though, I have a little text block. Okay, a text block. And that's where I'm going to display any messages that come back, any error messages. Now there's one additional thing I had to do there that we'll talk about in a minute, but the text property of this is simply bound to this property called message to display. So let's take a look at the search button here and see what I did. So as you can see, very little code in the code behind, right? I mean, there's hardly any code in the code behind. So what did I do? Well, I did the same thing I did just a minute ago by hand. I brought in an alias, okay, the namespace of this particular project. I created an instance of my search view model class, called it view model, and I hook up the data context of the main grid to that view model property, right? Just like I did in the other one. Exact same process. All right? So here's the thing, guys. If I have this here in the resources, remember what I said, XAML is going to create an instance of this at runtime. So what I probably want to do is I probably want to get an instance of that same one at my runtime, right, in the code behind. So what we can do is in the constructor of this particular user control or your window or whatever, I'm going to go out and I'm going to say go to this.resources. That means go to the resources section and find the key named ViewModel. It brings this back. I'm going to cast it as the search view model class, right, because that's what I named it. So I now have access to that same exact entity. So let's set a breakpoint here and step through the code. Okay. So when I put in like 2011 here for the end date and I hit search, the view model is exactly the same. So remember that since I have bound those guys two-way, notice that the value there in end date is indeed changed, isn't it? When you change something in the text box, it gets updated automatically in the class you bound to. So now I'm going to call this search routine in the view model. So in the button click event, I call the search. All right, little aside here. Some of you may have heard of commanding, right? Commanding in view model. This is where you could employ a command. Right? You do not have to write code in the code behind for this. Okay? There's a way to automatically call a method from a button click event and a few others as well. All right? So you do not have to write this code. You can go on and learn about commanding. As I said right up front, I'm not going to cover commanding. I'm trying to get the basics down here because this is a 200 level class. Okay? So, and I'm going to tell you one thing. Let me ask you this. Do you need commanding? Do you absolutely need commanding? Not really. Because by me writing one line of code under the click event to call this, have I broke any of the whys we were doing something of MVVM? Okay? Do I still have it in a separate class? Do I have no UI in that view model class? And can I unit test it? Absolutely. All right? So please don't think that you have to do commanding. I get a lot of people that are purists and they say, no, you have to do everything, no code behind whatsoever. Guys, don't worry about it, okay? I'm a little bit more practical, all right? I'm a little more pragmatic. I live in the real world where we have to get business applications done, okay? And let me ask you something. This model of code behind of a click event and being able to follow the logic, that's been around for years and years and years, hasn't it? This is a lot easier to follow than a command. I'll tell you that right now, okay? So now, if you feel you want to do it, no problem, go for it, okay? But this is nice because now I can see and can step through the code here. I can, you know, now step into the actual search method here. It's going to call something called validate, which is, again, right here in the view model. So I'm in the view model class, right? So all I do is I now, in the view model class, I'm going to check to see if the start date is greater than the end date. And if it is, I'm going to set a couple of properties here. I'm going to set a message to display and an is message visible equal to true. So I've got a couple of additional properties that I've added here. And if we take a look, we can see the start date and the end date. This guy inherits from what's called view model base. I assume everybody's here familiar with base classes, so we've got a view model base class that simply has message to display and his message visible, right? Okay, because I don't know about you, but in almost every view model I've ever created, I want to have some sort of messaging that I display, and whether or not I should display that. So that's what I did. Okay. So now on this, I simply now say, okay, great, what's the start date and end date? If they are invalid, I'm going to set the message to display and the is message visible is true. Okay, and then I would go on and do whatever searching I'm going to do. But just by setting those properties, that forces this to update, and the message to display is put into the text block. Okay, now there's one additional thing that I mentioned here that I need to show you. So on this text block, the other thing I had to do was display the text block, make it visible or invisible. Okay, so I bound that to that is message visible property, right, that we just saw, that I set to true. However, visibility in XAML is actually an enumeration, isn't it? It's like in Silverlight, it's collapsed or visible. In WPF, it's hidden, collapsed, or visible, right? Well, here's the thing. If I really want to create a view model that I can use across any type of application, I really need to make my isVisibles or isEnabled, I want to make them Boolean, right? Because if I wanted to run the same thing in ASP.NET, well, they don't have visibility, do they? It's visible. So keep everything as a Boolean. Well, that's a problem because I cannot then set isMessageVisible true. I can't set it to the visibility. So this is where you have to use what's called a converter. Okay, I have a tiny little converter class here. If I can find the darn thing, where is it? Here it is. Boolean to visibility converter. All it does is it takes the value, the true or false, and then returns either visible or collapsed. It's that simple. Okay? So that's, again, what I always look at is I'm looking at, I want to keep my view models generic. I don't want them just to work in XAML. I really want them to work anywhere. So again, try to keep any UI-specific code out of your view models. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So just by me setting this message to display, right, this property, if we go look at this property, it does the same thing. When the set gets called, it raises this property changed event. The WPF or Silverlight or the Metro XAML UI rendering engine is hooked into this event, and it's listening for that event. So if that event gets raised, it says, oh, hey, I better go look in my controls and find the guy that's bound to that, because I need to reread that property. And that's how it knows then to update, okay, the display. So very important, a couple of things here, right? Keep things generic, okay? Also, make sure you're raising that property changed. Okay. Now, does this hurt anything on a ASP.NET app that we're raising a property changed event? Not really. Yes, we're making a method call here, but if you'll notice, I'm checking to see if anybody is even hooked up to the event. In ASP.NET, you're not going to be hooking up to that event, so there's no harm, no foul. The event does not get raised. Does that make sense? Okay. Now you could maybe do a little bit of conditional compile and even compile that out, right? If you're under ASP.NET, maybe conditional compile the whole line out. Lots of ways you can get around that. Okay. So next. Now you'll notice a couple of things here, all right, before I go on with the next sample, that I've got a few DLLs inside of here, inside of my little, you know, MVVM sample here. So what I've done is I've created a common library, okay, and then I got a common library.silverlight. Now, look at this, guys. Do you see that little icon next to those files? Does anybody know what that is? A linked file. Who's not heard of a linked file? Anybody? A few of you. Okay. So here's what I did. I created a common library, right? Let me do it on the other project. Okay. I created, and this is real important, if you really want to get true reuse out of things. I'm going to create a new project here, and I'm going to create a class library. Okay, everybody created a class library, I'm assuming, at some point. Okay, when you say create a class library and you get a class one, okay, that is a class library that can be used by any .NET application. Except things like Silverlight or Windows Phone. because those are a subset of the full .NET class library, right? They don't have the full .NET framework available to them. For those, I have to add a new project, and I have to create a Silverlight class library. Okay? Now, I'm going to delete this class 1 in there. But what if I said, you know what, I'd really like to use this class 1 that I have in my regular because, hey, I know it'll work inside of there. So I could come over here and I could say add existing item, and I could go over to my class library and I could say grab class 1. Now, underneath the hood, what's happened? It copied the file. So now I've created a maintenance nightmare for myself, haven't I? Okay, not a good thing. So instead, here's what you can do. Right mouse click, add existing item, find your class 1 over there, but instead of clicking add, drop down the little guy here, which has been there since what, 2005, and say add as link. This now makes a pointer over to where the class really lives. But I've now included it in a Silverlight class library. Isn't that nice? So I can get some really good reuse out of this. Now, there's going to be things you might be using that obviously you cannot use inside of a Silverlight class library. That's where conditional compile can come in. All right. I'm not going to go into that. That's a little bit beyond the scope here. But that's what I have done over here. I created a common library with standard things that I know I can use in just about everything. Then from the Silverlight class library, I actually linked in a certain amount of those files. Okay, and I did the link part. So that way I'm reusing the exact same classes from one to the other. All right, does that make sense? So some of the common libraries that I've created, I have that common base, right, that has the iNotify property changed. Very simple. I created a business rule message because I'm going to create like a set of business rules. And then I have a business rule messages class. It's just simply a list of that. Okay. I have a data class base that simply has kind of a list of business rule failures for validation. We'll see this in just a minute. I have a response base class that we're going to use for returning from services. And then we have our view model base that we just looked at with the is message visible and the message to display. I got another one that we'll take a look at just a little bit later. All right, let's take another look at another sample then. So let's run this guy. So on this one, if I just hit validate on this one, now I've got a first name, a last name, a birth date. Okay, and if I set this to too old of a date here, I'm assuming no one's greater than 110 years, so you know, that's what I did. So I've got these validation rules coming back. So let's take a look at this one now. Pretty much the same exact scenario. An alias, a namespace, call it view model. Okay, I've still got my Boolean divisibility. Now let's walk through the validate method. So again, I hooked up the person view model, grabbed that same instance that was created in XAML, and then view model.validate. See? So if we go into here, I got pretty much the same type of code except one thing. Okay, I know a lot of you have been creating your own classes, your own business rule classes. Right? So a lot of you already have a lot of business rules written in another class. So what I've done here is a little bit more of probably what you would do. From your view model, reference your person class or your customer class or wherever your business rules are. So what I did is I created a private variable here. Where am I? Person view model. Okay, called detail data, that's just the detail guy, and person. So I created an instance of the person class here in the view model. Because that way, what I can do is in the validate, I can call that person's validate method. Right? I'm not putting business rules in the view model, I'm keeping them where I built them before. How many of you have built business rules in another class already, guys? How many of you have done that? Yeah, a lot of us have, right? Don't duplicate them in the view model, simply call the ones that you've already got written. All right, so that's what I've done here. Now, there's a million ways to handle business rules. This is just one way that I came up with. So what I do is I go through and I check to see if the first name is, you know, equal to string.empty. And I have a little collection here called business rule failures. And I simply add a new business rule message to that collection saying, hey, first name must be filled in. And if the length is less than 2, then I say, hey, the first name has to be more than 1 character. I don't know anybody that has a 1-character first name, right? And same thing on last name. So what I end up with then, right, is a collection of business rules that have failed. And then what I've done in this particular instance is down at the bottom here, okay, I've created this text block to display those messages. Okay, and the way this works then is in the view model is I check to see did everything validate. If it didn't, is message visible equal to true, which is going to turn on the text block, and then I go after the business rule failures and I call its toString method because I wrote the toString to loop through and delimit each line by an environment.newline. Now, I could have also put a list box there, couldn't I? And I could have just bound to the collection itself. Again, lots of different ways to do this. Okay? Maybe in an ASP.NET app, I might bind that business rule failures collection to a bulleted list, for instance, right? Because you could reuse this in an ASP.NET app as well. All right. So, yet another example of a view model. Next. All right, so here, now we're getting more to what you guys are really, you know, after. So hopefully I've set the stage. Now how do we deal with data, right? So you've got data out there in a database that you want to get at. I'm assuming everybody's doing data type stuff. So let's now look at data. I've got a complete add, edit type of data thing coming up as well. But to start out, let's just start with a very simple loading a list. So what would this look like in the view model world? So what I did is, again, I created a product view model list only. It inherits from my view model base, just like everything else has. I created a property called data collection that is an observable collection of product objects. Okay, so I have up here, where is it? Right there. I have a product class. Okay, and this product class simply has all of the properties coming from this table that's out there in SQL Server. It has a product ID, product name, introduction date, cost, price, is discontinued. Okay, so out in SQL Server, I have a product table. I've included the SQL script for you, so you'll be able to run this when you get back. So here is the product table right here. Okay, so it has, you know, product name, introduction date, cost, and price. So very simple little data. And at this point, you know, I've got a class then that mimics every single one of those. So all I've done inside of here is created an observable collection of those. All right. Everybody knows that in XAML, we want to use an observable collection. That way, if I add or update or remove items from that collection, the list box or whatever it's bound to will be deleted from automatically, right? Or added to, whatever. So that's the first thing I did. I then created a loadAll method. This loadAll method, his job is to simply go out and call our web service that we have hooked up here. It's a WCF service. Okay? And it goes out and does this asynchronously, get products async, okay? And in the completed event, what I grab here is the result, and I put it into this data collection property that I created. And then I bind that data collection property to this list box right here. You can see the path is data collection. So let's set a breakpoint and see how this works. Okay. Now again, there's very little code in the code behind. This is the code behind. Let's set a breakpoint here and actually step through. So here we are. We're coming into the load all. I'm going to set a breakpoint down here as well. So I'm going to go through. I'm going to hook up my my product completed event handler, call the get products async. I'm going to hit F5 here. And now we're down here, and we can see that the data collection did get returned of all those products from my table out there in SQL Server. I take that data collection and I pass it to the data collection here, which then binds up to the list box here. Pretty simple. Okay, now let's take a look at the service really quick. So I have this product service. Okay, the product service here has a get products method. Now, here's where you would use Entity Framework or Link to SQL or whatever, right? That's up to you. I just created just bare-bones ADO.NET, so I wouldn't have to teach anything different, okay? I think everybody can read ADO.NET. So just a very simple little select asterisk, load up our product collection, which I call data collection, okay? And it returns this in what's called a product response class, okay? So the product response class is just this little guy here. It has a couple of properties: data collection, which is a products collection, and a product detailed data. So if I was going after a single product, I'd fill in detailed data. If I was going after a collection like I did here, I'd fill in the data collection property. Pretty simple. Okay? So this response class is what gets returned from the service. So if I come over here to where I had my, my view model, okay, and I look at this guy, see this result is actually a product response. So we can take a look at everything that's in there. We got the data collection, the detailed data, but notice I got a couple of other things. Error message, I got a status of what happened, okay? So what I kind of look at here for my services is I wanted something a little more robust than just, you know, the product data coming back, for instance. Right? How would I handle errors? Well, I'd just put them into my response object. I'd handle the errors and log them and everything up on the server. Okay? I didn't really want to generate a SOAP vault. That's just me. So lots of ways to do the service. That's not what we're here to learn. Okay? But that's the way that I did it. Okay, cool. So makes sense? Not too bad, loading up a list. So what you look at, guys, is this. You're looking at each of your items that you're going to be designing on your view. You say, what are the things I need to fill in with data? Whatever you need to fill in with data, you got to have a property for it, don't you? Hopefully you're going to get that data probably from a model somewhere. Okay? You also look at, what are the things that I need to affect on the UI, such as making things visible, invisible? What things do I need to make enabled or disabled? Those also need to become properties, don't they? Okay. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, wow, this is a lot of work. Okay. And you know what? You're right. It is more work than just writing the code behind. But that's not the reason we're doing it, right? I'm not doing it just to create work. Now, if you're paid by the hour, you're like, woohoo, this is great, man. You know, I can get paid more because it's going to take me longer to do it. Okay. Hopefully it won't. I think as you get into it, you'll find it doesn't take as long. Okay, but the idea here is that we're getting that reusability, we're getting the testability. Okay, and those to me are the major things that I'm gaining out of this. Right, the ability to switch that UI in the future and not have to write a whole bunch of code in the code behind, because I've built all of that into the view model. Okay. All right. I mean, after this, guys, it's not that different, okay? Everything else we do now is just simply more of the same, okay? So hopefully I've shown you how easy this is, right? So now here I've got, okay, a list box that displays the data from the product table, okay? Now notice how this is all disabled down here, okay? If I go into edit, though, look what happens. Now, the list part becomes enabled or disabled. The add becomes disabled. The save and the cancel became enabled, and now my editing area becomes enabled. If I cancel, I'm back to the way I was before. Okay? So that's pretty cool, because now all of that logic of turning things off and on has now been put into the view model. If we take a look at the code behind for this particular example, there's not a lot of code here. Okay, so when I go into edit mode, look at that, a couple of lines of code. I probably have more comments in here than code. And each of my little click events, all of these are simply one line to call something in the view model. That's nice, isn't it? Because again, think about it. This is Silverlight. If your boss comes to you and says, hey, I need that exact same screen that you just did there in Silverlight, I need it in WPF. Well, WPF would be easy. I mean, it's literally copy and paste, because all of this would exactly work, wouldn't it? Okay, but if you said to do it in ASP.NET, I'm only throwing away a few, you know, what, 20 lines of code here in the UI and recreating maybe another 25 or 30 lines in ASP.NET web forms. Okay, now if you're doing MVC, you might be able to take advantage of some data binding too, right? Of course, in Visual Studio 2012, web forms now has data binding, so that's cool. So whether you're doing web forms in either one, you now have data binding. I love that. So about time, right? Okay. So now inside of here, right, we have a little bit more of, you know, kind of a more robust view model now. So that's this guy, product view model simple. Now if you'll notice, look at how many lines of code we got. 290 lines of code. Don't freak. I'm going to cut that down in just a minute, all right? But it's because I eliminated all that code from the code behind that it went over to here, okay? And again, I got the benefits that I can unit test this. So that 290 lines of code isn't that bad. All right. So what did I do inside of here? Well, I added a few more things. I added some UI variables like is save enabled, is cancel enabled, is add enabled, is the list enabled, is the detail area enabled, right? I also have what index I just selected in the list portion, and of course I have any messages to display, right? Just like I had in the other one. Okay, does that make sense? So for each one of these then, I have the corresponding UI properties that raise the property changed event. And if we look at the XAML, you'll notice that each one of these has those bindings, right? So the is enabled on the list box is bound to is list enabled. The add button has an is enabled property that's bound to the is add enabled. Okay, same with the save button and the cancel button. Okay, but again, all of the logic for controlling all of this is in that view model. It's not in the code behind. And that, again, gets us more to what we're looking for. Okay. All right. So here's all this stuff, right? So we've got the isAdd enabled, the list enabled, all of this. I wrote a couple of additional methods. I wrote one called set normal UI display, which kind of means I'm just coming in, displaying the list. They're browsing through the list. So the add, it's not in add mode. The isAdd enabled is set to true, right? So the add button's true. So this method here sets up this view right here. Oops, sorry, wrong one. This one. There we go. Okay, so that method there sets up this view where these things are enabled and disabled. When I click edit, or if I were to click add, okay, that's the other mode here, which is the set edit UI display, right? So I turn the add enabled is false, save enabled is true, right? Because I've gone into edit or I've gone into add mode. All right, clear as mud? Hopefully it's not too bad. So your job is to simply set and reset properties, isn't it? It's to create properties to control the UI piece. Okay. All the rest of this, you know, load all the stuff into the list box, simply call in your services. Now, a lot of people would actually move this part out too, by the way. A lot of people will actually create what they call a service agent class, and that service agent class would actually make the call to your model, or in this case, a WCF service. So lots of ways to go there. Okay. Adding a record sets the edit UI, sets the add mode to true. The reason why we set an add mode to true is so that when I'm going to save the data, I can check to see, do I need to do an insert or do I need to do an update? Okay. So I've got the appropriate insert and update methods here that call the WCF service for you. So this is a full add edit type of scenario here. I didn't do a delete. I figured you guys could, you know, build that. So we ended up with 291 lines of code. So I created one more example here. Okay, it's the exact same look and feel, same exact, you know, user control basically. Oop, I can just keep that going. Same exact thing here, does everything the same, add, you know, cancel, all of that. So what I did though in this particular case is I looked at, you know, if I have, you know, 50 screens, probably 90% of them have an add, save, cancel type of scenario, right? So what I did is I, again, pushed some stuff down. So this view model actually ends up with only 150 lines of code. So I created a view model add, edit, delete base class, right? And inside of that add, edit, delete base class is where I then put all those private UI properties that we just looked at, and I wrote those methods that I had that turned things off and on as appropriate. Okay. Now, if I don't use them, if I never bind to them on a you know XAML page, does it matter if I have these extra ones? Nah, that's fine. So again, think about creating base classes, right? Move that stuff down, create a view model base class, create maybe a view model add, edit, delete base class. You might create other types of those, okay, to make sure everything gets displayed appropriately. But this is really nice because it now just keeps moving stuff down. I have very little code behind, very little now in the view model. Okay, I have my service layer. Okay, same thing over here on the WPF side, right? Exact same common library, exact same set of services. I have all the same exact samples that we saw there. They're just done in WPF now. Okay, so there's the person sample, there's the simple view models. So these are all now done in WPF. Okay, and I mean literally, guys, I copied and pasted the XAML, right? There wasn't really almost any need to change anything. Okay. I do Silverlight typically first because then I put in the mode equals two-way, because when I then put that into WPF, it's fine, isn't it? Because mode equals two-way is a valid thing in there in WPF, even though you don't need it. Okay. So personally, I like being a little more explicit, all right, because when I'm a little bit more explicit, that way if they change something in a future version, I don't have to worry about it if they change the default, right? That's just maybe just me, but I kind of like doing that. All right. Now, one thing I thought I'd show you here, okay, is, you know, like I said, I just wrote this article for Code Magazine. I think it's coming out next month, if I remember right. And where is it? Here it is, Code Magazine, Code Behind a View Model. So I thought I'd show you this, because this class really is only an hour long, okay? But I thought you'd get a kick out of this, because what I did is, as you can see, I've got an added delete code behind. And this one is ASP.NET, I believe. Yes, it is. Okay. So what I thought was kind of cool is we look at this and we see I got 379 lines of code here, all right, to do just this simple little page. And let's run this so you can see what it looks like. Okay. So it's just a very simple little, you know, add, edit, delete screen here. And it's got a couple of things, shirt size and shirt color, right? It's adding a shirt. So like a shirt ordering company, for instance, okay? And it took 379 lines of code to do that. Now there's a lot of comments in there and stuff. So that was the code behind version of that in ASP.NET. I then said, well, what would it look like if I did, you know, ASP.NET and used a view model, right? So in this case, I created this shirt view model, as you can see here. Okay, now it's got 365 lines of code. And then let's take a look at the code behind in the page. Wow, I cut it down over half from the one before. Again, it didn't mean I wrote less code. I just moved more code over to the view model, didn't I? Okay. Unfortunately, in web forms, you still have to write code such as, you know, take all the values out of your view model and move them into your text boxes or whatever. All right. We don't have data binding in 2010. 2012, we will. Okay. So then even that code will go away, won't it? I could have taken the same thing and put it into Windows forms, couldn't I? And in Windows forms, I would have had to write this type of code, too, to move data back and forth. In the XAML world, we get spoiled because we don't have to do that. That's really nice, okay, because of the two-way data binding that we get. So that was kind of neat. It was a neat thing to do. You know, and again, I then wrote it for WPF as well. And I'll tell you know what? I had the hardest time actually writing the code behind for WPF because I've never done it. I've always done view model with the code, you know, with WPF. So I actually had to really think about, well, how do I do that in the code behind? But as you can see, it's about the same amount of lines of code, right? 376 lines of code here for WPF code behind. But then when I do the view model approach on WPF, it really is dramatic because, you know, since I get the data binding, it actually ends up to be, wow, 55 lines, right? So 376 down to 55. Okay. So now that's a compelling reason. If you're used to doing the WinForms or ASP.NET web forms, and you're used to moving data in and out, by taking advantage of binding, you can really dramatically cut down the amount of code that you write. So really kind of a neat thing. All right, so I kind of wanted to show you that, all right, just so you can get an idea, you know, of what that looks like. Okay. Over here to the PowerPoints, because so there's a lot more I could have done. I wanted to keep it cut to, you know, so I can have a room for questions. So feel free to come up to the mics or yell it out. I'll repeat the question if I need to. But I wanted to keep it short. I didn't want to go in and just completely overload you because, again, this was a 200-level class. Hopefully I've shown you how easy MVVM is to do. It's really just you writing an additional class. You really do need to understand that data model. right, the data binding model, all right, I think you'll find that when you start doing this, your testing and reusability is huge on this. Like I said, I've been able to successfully now create a whole bunch of view models that I can port from one type of, you know, environment to another. So we're doing, you know, Silverlight, WPF, Windows Phone. So I just keep reusing the same stuff over and over. It's great. And again, for those of you that, you know, read a lot of articles out there, don't worry about being 100% code-free, you know, in the code behind. I don't think you need to, all right? Nothing wrong with it. Hey, add commanding. If you want to do it, not a problem at all. But don't feel you have to, okay? And sometimes I find it's a little bit easier to kind of follow the logic of the code, too, personally. All right, so what questions do we have, guys? What questions? Feel free, guys. Nothing. There's no stupid questions. Yeah? I'm sorry? Okay, good question. Do we put things in different assemblies? Absolutely. Okay, and, you know, for me, what I did over here, as you saw, I did have things a little bit in separate assemblies in my project, but I did not move the view model out into a separate assembly, but normally I would. I do like breaking the assembly, you know, the view models out. Okay, I have my service layer, right? I then have my data layer. I like each one of those to be separate, and as you saw, I had that common library as well. Great question. So, yeah? Okay. So his question is, you know, is it a good practice to use a repository design pattern or something, some other design pattern to get the data from your model to your view model, right? I think I said that correctly. So absolutely. I mean, you can use whatever pattern you want. There's a lot of them out there, okay? Different people have different needs. But, you know, take advantage of any of the standard patterns and practices that are out there. I like the repository personally, yeah. So, yep, I agree with you. But there are others. So, and, you know, I'm not going to poo-poo any pattern or practice. I mean, as long as you're following some sort of guidance and you're being standard about it, right? Be consistent. That's kind of what I look for. I'm sorry, I can't hear. The RIA services. Ah, okay. You know, with the RIA services, what's kind of nice about that is it does give you a lot of the binding automatically, creates a lot, it writes a lot of the code for you, okay? That's about it that I see, you know. Personally, I've never used RIA. I'll tell you that flat out. I've never used it, okay? I like having the full WCF services at my beck and call, okay? I find it did a little bit too much for me underneath the hood that I didn't agree with when I kind of cracked it open. So me, I kind of like having the full everything available to me. I also like, you know, in my case, I like to be able to say, I usually have a view model that talks to a service agent. And so at that level, I can decide whether I'm going against WCF. I may change to the web API coming up. I may want to change to OData. I have a little bit more flexibility than if I get locked into kind of one way of doing things. So if you do want to use RIA services, nothing wrong with that. Like I say, with everything with Microsoft, put kind of a little wrapper in front of it. Okay, you know, that way you can change out that implementation later on. That's what I always recommend to people. So, yeah. How to reduce the memory footprint with XAML? A little outside the scope of this talk, okay, but one way you can do that is stop using Blend. Blend sometimes really bloats the XAML a lot. Other than that, there's other things you can do, but, write code behind, build the objects yourself a lot, things like that, but a little beyond the scope of this thing. Anybody have anything else on MVVM? Over here first. Okay, so the question is with ASP.NET MVC, all right? So, you know, how do we kind of control the pattern or, you know? So what I do is for my controller, I always call the view model, right? So I still actually use a view model in MVC. How many do that, by the way? I'm finding that's pretty popular. Yeah. So that's the way I do it. Was that the gist of your question?
Yeah.
Okay. So now we still can use some of the AJAX stuff, though, to make a call to your service, right? To do kind of more of the client-side stuff as well. Okay, so could you use Knockout.js or something like that and bring that view model kind of down to the client for some of that? You know what? My guys I know are using Knockout. So that's what we've typically done at this point. So, yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, as far as, you know, how big your view models get, and, you know, because if you got a page that's really big, you know, how big is this thing going to get, or should you use maybe a couple of different view models, combine them together for that page? Is that kind of the gist of the question? Yeah. You know, I take that as a case-by-case basis, all right? Now, one of the things that I'm a huge proponent of is user controls, user controls, user controls. So if I have a user control, let's say I had a Silverlight page with, you know, maybe 10 tabs on it. Each tab to me would be a separate user control, and each user control would then have its own little view model, right? And then I can have a master guy if I want that controls everything, but typically more often than not, I just use like a message broker type thing to communicate from one to the other. So that's kind of the approach that I do, and that way I don't hit a huge view model because I got this huge page. So I really try to compartmentalize everything. Does that help, or? Okay, good, yeah. That would what? I'm sorry? Okay, do I have an example of a one-to-many relationship using a view model? Not that I can pull up really quickly, okay? What you got to think about in a one-to-many is I'm going to have basically two collections in my view model, right? I'm going to have the parent, I'm going to have the child. So what happens? When you select something in the first one, okay, you have like a selected index changed event that fires, okay, or you have your selected value set to go to a property that's a singular of that guy. When in the set for that, you can simply now go and refresh your child collection to be just the ones for that particular one entity you just selected from your parent. Does that make sense? So you'd have a collection for the parent, a singular for the parent, right? So if it's products, you have a product property. The list box would actually say update that guy. When the set for this one happens, you can now go and load your parent or your children collection. Okay. So I'm sorry I don't have one right off the top of my head, but I've seen many. Yeah. So feel free to shoot me an email and I can find one for you. Sure. All right, tell you what, folks, I'm gonna go ahead and stop here. If you have other questions, feel free to come up. I'm gonna be down at that Tech Talk or Chalk Talk, whatever they're calling it, down at the Dev Tools booth. Again, my name's Paul Sheriff. Thank you very much.